From the day that Harry S. Truman moved into the White House in the summer of 1945, he swore the place was haunted. The sound of footsteps echoed down empty corridors, pictures mysteriously fell from the walls, and eerie knocks on the doors at night yielded nobody on the other side. But when the president almost fell through the ceiling of the Blue Room into a meeting of the Daughters of the American Revolution, a horrified First Lady Bess Truman demanded that the president have the place inspected. Well, all of this led to a very interesting story, which Robert Clara reveals in his new book, The Hidden White House, Harry Truman and the Reconstruction of America's Most Famous Residence. It's a great pleasure to welcome Robert Clara to the program. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Oh, Joe, thanks for having me.
So what was the state of the White House when the Trumans moved in?
Well, it was actually rather appalling, at least on the second floor. The White House's upkeep had been neglected by the Roosevelts for much of the Depression and all of the Second World War. They kept the staterooms on the main floor in good shape because that's where the visitors went. But when Bess Truman and Margaret came over to look at the second floor, the residential floor where the first family lives, they were completely in shock at the decrepit condition of it. Not only was it just dingy because it just simply hadn't been painted or kept up very well in a housekeeping sense, but there were structural flaws that were starting to show themselves as well. It's funny because at the time they didn't notice those, but in time the structural flaws would be so serious that they couldn't help but notice them.
I think it's a fascinating story because we so often hear of the attempted assassination on the president at Blair House, and it's sort of glossed over of why the president was at Blair House and not at the White House.
Yeah, I tried to make this point because the reason that we nearly lost Harry Truman as president, and we came very, very close to losing him to an assassin's bullet, is because of an architectural project. He was moved out of the White House because the house required a complete gut renovation to prevent it from collapsing. And there's a kind of irony here because they moved him out of the White House in effect to save his life, and they moved him across the street to Blair House where he nearly lost his life just to a different cause. Blair House was a beautiful federal-era row house across Pennsylvania Avenue, which is to this day used as the official guest residence for the White House. And it's a lovely little jewel box of a house. The problem is that it lacked any of the security protocols that were in effect at the White House, which is surrounded by a high iron fence and grounds that can be patrolled, guard booths and all of that. Blair House is just simply trotting up a few steps to a front door, opening it, and you're inside. And the two assassins who came in an attempt to kill Truman got awfully close to doing that.
It is a fascinating story because, as you point out, as engineers and architects ultimately wanted to keep the White House's outer stone walls standing on their own, pretty much everything inside had to be gutted and started over.
Yeah, it's tricky because, you know, in later years, the renovation of the White House has come under fire from some quarters that maintain that this was not really what any contemporary preservationist would call preservation. They scraped the entire place clean, only leaving the shell standing. But it's a complicated thing because the interior walls of the house had been built without foundations, and the walls were in such bad shape, and the wood of the floors and walls were in such horrendous shape that there was really no practical way that they could have been kept. And so at the time, especially, the only reasonable route that they could take was to essentially gut the place and put a framework of steel and poured concrete inside of it, which is exactly what they did.
What is really interesting and I thought ultimately amusing / sad about this story is that even as they were going through all of this, and stop me if you've heard this one before.
I probably have, but please go ahead.
The federal bureaucracy just takes over and makes this such a huge deal of how much this project should cost. Mm-hmm. And it's underfunded, and it is really, they're trying to rush it through. And so in hindsight, there's a lot of things that could be done differently.
Yes, and probably better. And I've gone back and forth over this point several times myself, and also had a certain sense of deja vu, if that's possible, because I wasn't around in 1950 when they did this. But with all the talk of the political infighting and recalcitrance and overall babyishness that we see in Washington, that's nothing new. Truman needed $5.4 million to accomplish the renovation that he wanted, and the Senate voted him that money pretty much immediately, but the appropriation got stuck in the House. Go figure. And long story short, they wasted 64 days in having hearings and arguing, and the players included Clarence Cannon, a conservative Democrat from Missouri, who was rather outspoken in his desire to see the White House knocked down and another one built in its place. So, you know, while the political infighting also, as you point out, resulted in a job that was ultimately rushed and underfunded, if you look at the other side of that coin, it's kind of a miracle that it happened at all.
With all of that said, there is also a chance to improve upon things. And you're coming through this Cold War hysteria. You're concerned about the Soviet Union. And as you write, this renovation also produced a second White House, which is this complex, which is buried deep below. And still, because of its very nature, being secretive, we don't know a lot about it.
No, and this was hard for me because obviously it's not easy to find out very much information about the atomic shelter in the White House, nor did I really want to find out too much because I was here in New York during 9/11, and you know, nobody wants Homeland Security more than I do, so I wouldn't have disclosed very much anyway, you know, beyond what I thought was reasonable and fair. But yeah, the available record and the documents that I was able to find still painted a pretty compelling picture of what they did down there. The strange part of it was that the atomic bomb shelter below the house became obsolete almost immediately, because at the time that it was conceived, we were still in the first generation of atomic weaponry using plutonium implosion bombs. By the time the hydrogen bomb came along, the destructive power of that thing was such that protecting the president very quickly became a matter of getting him out of Washington, not giving him a place to shelter beneath the house.
So when former Vice President Dick Cheney is on 60 Minutes recently and talks about being in the bunker of the White House during 9/11, is this the area we're talking about?
I have a feeling it is. There's two places that it's possible to be. One is the Situation Room, which is downstairs from the West Wing. The other one is of course, the bomb shelter. I mean, in terms of conventional protection, the place is hard to beat, you know, and so it still affords an appreciable degree of safety for anybody who's down there. And I guess if I were Dick Cheney, I probably would have run down there too. What I was fascinated to find out, which is in the book, is when it came down to a nuclear false alarm toward the end of Truman's presidency, he didn't run down there. The shelter was built as a matter of protecting the president, you know, in terms of security protocol. But Truman didn't believe that he was entitled to that kind of protection if ordinary Americans were not. So when there was, in fact, a false alarm, it was a radar reading that said that looked like 20 planes were inbound toward Washington, and there was fear that they were Soviet bombers, Truman stayed upstairs.
You make a good point, because the subtitle of the book is Harry Truman and the Reconstruction of America's Most Famous Residence. This is a story about the White House and its reconstruction, but it's also very much a story about Harry Truman.
Oh, yeah. And I went out of my way to do that. I was conscious of the fact that if I had set out only to do a book about an engineering and architectural project, no matter what glorious adjectives I could conjure, I would still be left with a pretty bland book, with all due respect to architects and engineers out there. I wanted this to be a human story, because ultimately all good stories are. And the rebuilding of the White House was very much the story not just of a house, but the story of the family who lived in that house, and the story of the people who worked in that house, and also the story of the people who were trying to protect the people who worked in that house. There were so many layers to it. But I was extremely lucky to to be blessed with a set of characters that, I mean, I couldn't have made up more colorful people than these.
When was the project deemed finished?
It was finished, I don't remember the date offhand, but it was finished in 1952, and there were a few months left to Truman's term as president, not too long before Eisenhower moved in. Truman had wanted to spend more time back in the White House, which was one of the reasons for his rushing the work. And here again, I felt a certain degree of conflict over his motives, because he was very much a visionary for doing what needed to be done to the House, at least in the context of the sensibilities of the time. But his insistence on rushing the work also resulted directly and indirectly in corners being cut and the loss of some important parts of the interior that I believe, had the job been paced out a little bit more slowly, might have been saved.
So that was 60-some years ago, and as we look at it now, what do you believe the condition of the building to be in?
Oh, of course, I'm not privy to the latest engineering reports, but given the materials that Truman specified be put into this building, and there's a picture of this in the book, one of the steel beams was lying on its side on the ground, and one of the construction workers posed next to it, and the beam comes up to his belt buckle. The steel that went into this house would have been enough to hold up a skyscraper, but it was only holding up a three-story building. Truman vowed that this would be the last time that the White House would have to be rebuilt, and so far as I can tell, his word is still good. This house is arguably as permanent a thing as stands in Washington, or perhaps anywhere.
The name of the book, The Hidden White House, Harry Truman and the Reconstruction of America's Most Famous Residence. The book is published by Thomas Dunn Books from St. Martin's Press. Robert Clara, great pleasure. This book was a fascinating read, and I thank you so much for sharing with us this morning.
Thank you, Joe. Appreciate being part of your show.
A delight. Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book, The Hidden White House, by Robert Clara. It is published by Thomas Dunn Books from St. Martin's Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.